Welcome to the Political Economy Podcast. I'm your host, Jim Pethakoukas of the American Enterprise Institute. Each week, I feature a lively conversation with experts on some of the most important economic and policy questions of our time. If you enjoy this podcast, please consider rating and reviewing it on iTunes, Google Podcasts, or Stitcher. Ratings and reviews really help with the podcast's visibility, and I always appreciate the feedback. Thanks, and on to the show. Generation after generation seemed to pine for the good old days, an elusive time when many of us think morals, institutions, and the quality of life in general were higher. Americans are no exception to this rule, but there's something unique about American nostalgia. While we reminisce about the past, we also owe much of our success as a nation to our forward-thinking culture that embraces the possibility of the American dream. Today on Political Economy, I talk with Carlin Bowman about the way Americans view their nation and the tensions between their love of their past and their strong hope for the future. Bowman is a distinguished senior fellow emeritus here at AEI, where she specializes in American public opinion. In 1982, she founded Election Watch, the longest-running political analysis program in Washington. She's also been a Forbes columnist since 2008. Carlin, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much, Jim. Happy to be here.
I'm going to start with the easiest question I can think of.
Okay.
Are Americans a nostalgic people, or are we a future-oriented people?
Sorry to disappoint you, but I think we're both. I can't choose because the polls point in both directions.
Let's talk a bit about this. In what ways are we nostalgic? In what ways are we future-oriented? And has that changed over time?
We're future-oriented because we've always been an optimistic people. That's a thread that runs throughout our history, and you see it in polling data. Even today, when people are pretty disgruntled about a lot of things, they're still optimistic in the long term about the United States, about democracy, and other kinds of things. They're very worried right now. But are we nostalgic about the past? Yes, we are. We tend to think many things were better in the past. That doesn't mean we want to return, but we do tend to think that many things were better. I mean, if you look at the survey data, and I started this project when I came across a Gallup question from the 1930s that asked Americans whether people were happier in the horse and buggy days. And 62% of Americans in 1939 said Americans were happier then. But then Gallup followed up with a question, well, would you like to return to the horse and buggy days? And only 20-odd% wanted to return. So I think you see the tension there, and you see it in so many areas. We're worried that we're less patriotic than we were in the past, but at the same time, we're worried about so many other things. We're worried about civility. We're worried about discipline. We're worried about the work ethic. And I think those things are pretty natural in the human spirit, because when you care deeply about some things, about your country, you worry about the erosion of various things.
I think at least superficially, it sounds like cognitive dissonance, that we think things in all those ways were somehow better in the past, yet at the same time, we don't want to live in that past. Is that just because, like, to use the horse and buggy example, because people back in 1939 realized that, well, if you live in the past, don't get appendicitis. You know, that, is it purely like because they miss those sort of material benefits, or are just people weird and they just kind of believe two different things?
Well, I think there is cognitive dissonance in the polls. We see it in so many areas, not just in nostalgia, in people's underlying attitudes. And I think when you look back to the past, I think maybe some things were better. Families were probably closer. Religious ties were stronger, for example, than they are today or than they were in 1939. So there's reason, I think, to look back with some positive views about the past. At the same time, as you say, people do not want to give up their creature comforts and good medicine and all sorts of other things.
As I was looking through the polling data in the report, sometimes it did seem like question wording sort of mattered. I don't have the example at hand, but it seemed like depending on how you word it, it gets people thinking about good times in the past or the good times now. So it does seem to bounce around a little.
It does bounce around a little, but I think we're tapping something real in terms of nostalgia. And we've seen it as a thread in our politics. We've seen it as a thread in social commentary. So I think it is real. You worry, again, as I said earlier, about the erosion of things that you hold dear.
Would we likely find similar numbers in Canada, in Great Britain, in France?
People historically, at least in survey data, and I think it's still true today, that we're more optimistic than people in those other countries. For example, Gallup has a wonderful battery of questions from the 1970s that ask whether or not you consider yourself part of the haves or have-nots. And Americans have always been different on that, thinking of themselves as part of the have category. So in a lot of areas, you do see very substantial differences. And when you think about Great Britain, some of the European countries, a hierarchical country where it was really difficult to rise above the area in which you were born, the class in which you were born. But here you could do that. So we tend to be more optimistic about the future. But you've always got to be careful because right now we're pretty pessimistic about things. Inflation has such a powerful effect on public opinion. It tends to depress our views of the present and the future, whereas high unemployment depresses our views of the present, but not of the future. And so we are in a down period right now, no question about it. But we are generally a more optimistic looking people. And again, question wording is really important, as you say, in some areas. If you ask about whether all American children are going to be better off, let's say, in the next century or the next 15 years, and then you ask a very specific question, well, what about your children? Are they going to be better off? And people always say their own children are going to be better off. That's pretty consistent in the polls. Again, we don't have a lot of those questions anymore. They used to ask them a lot in the 70s and 80s. But you do see the question wording is enormously important there because we're pessimistic about the population as a whole. We get our information from the media. The constant negativity bias really does inform broad public opinion. But when you start asking people about their personal lives, you get a very different impression. People are pretty happy. They're pretty satisfied with their personal lives. They're satisfied with their jobs, and you don't hear those stories very often.
Just to jump back briefly to that inflation unemployment question, which I find interesting. Do you think it's a factor that when there's inflation, everybody sees prices going up? Everybody remembers when prices were lower, and whether you're rich or not so rich, it's still eating up more of your income. Where unemployment, even in, the worst periods of unemployment, most people keep their jobs. You certainly may be more worried, but most of us don't lose our jobs where inflation. All of us are paying more.
That's right. All of us are paying attention when inflation is and high prices like we have right now have been a factor for quite a while. Even in the depths of the Great Recession, and I haven't looked back at those data in a while, but when you ask people, and this was the high point on these questions, when you ask people whether they were fearful about losing their jobs, still those numbers were just remarkably low, about 12%. But yet it was a real crisis, no question, overall. And again, some numbers like this are actually pretty steady in public opinion and probably have nothing to do with facts on the ground. They're always about 15 to 17% of the population who are really having a very hard time. I mean, this is an aside, it's not part of the nostalgia story, but it's just interesting to me.
Somewhat relatedly, consumer confidence numbers. A lot of economists look at those. I think of the consumer confidence, and I think the classic right track, wrong track numbers. Do those numbers tell me something about how people feel about the economy? I'm assuming in the past they did, because there's been talk now that those numbers have been more infected with partisan political bias, that even if you're doing better and you might otherwise feel good about the direction of the economy, if your guy is not in the Oval Office, the economy's terrible. Then if like the very next day it switched, I feel much better about the future. The economy looks brighter. Are those numbers as sort of reliable as they used to be as sort of economic and personal finance kind of indicators?
Let's look at both of those questions over time. Right track is a question that was asked for the first time in 1973, and it's a staple of the polling business right now, a very low level of right track. There have only been three periods in our history when people have thought the country was on the right track. In the Reagan presidency, when people thought it was morning in America, the economy was very good, and that's really key. Again, right after 9/11, very, very briefly, and I'm sorry, also in 1999 and 2000, and you've written so extensively about this, when people felt very good about the country. We actually had a balanced budget, a few other things that people care about. And so those are the only times where the country has really been on the right track. But interestingly, I'm not so sure that that question taps into political sentiment as much as it taps into just concerns about the country, the kinds of things that I was talking about in terms of nostalgia, of things being not as good as they were in the past on some in terms of social societal factors overall. So that question is very interesting. It's very low right now. It is informed by partisan polarization, and it's been bumping along at a very low level for a long time. Consumer confidence is clearly related more to how the economy is doing, with the battery that the University of Michigan asks. And today, Fortune came out with a new study saying that the reason that, for example, men and women who've always been very different on consumer confidence have now come closer together, with men moving closer to women in terms of their concerns about the economy. This is an aside and not quite on point, but I think that's a better indicator of economic conditions, that it goes up and down a lot more.
I would like to think that the consumer confidence numbers, that the right track, wrong track numbers, that there's nothing wrong with those numbers that like an economy like the late 90s wouldn't solve. Is it still like the economy's stupid, or am I being too materialistic and boiling?
The economy, stupid, is very important. And that's why Trump seems to be getting ground as he talks about things really were better. Whether that's true or not is another question under my presidency. But I think because of his assertive style, people really feel, well, yeah, maybe that was the case. Maybe things really were better. So if the economy started, I mean, the economy is obviously doing very well now by a number of indicators, but if you brought down prices, this is a big if, you could do these kinds of things immediately. But if you did that and took us back to where we were, I think you'd see a higher number for right track, wrong track. So it certainly is informed by the economy, but I think it's informed by other things as well.
One of the interesting bits of the many interesting parts of the study is a brief look at the 1996 election, which you really had these kind of two views almost perfectly distilled, where you had one guy literally saying, "Let me take you to be a bridge to the past. I remember how things used to be. I was there. I will take you back to a better America," Bob Dole. And then Clinton, of course, riffing off that, saying, "I'm not going to take you a bridge back to some imagined past. We're going a bridge to the future." So two very clear distillations of these views. That election, people sided with the forward-looking. Really, I think, do we get that kind of very clear presentation of those two views as we did in that election?
Yeah, we did. Absolutely. Can you imagine a politician like Biden or Trump saying age has its advantages, which was what Dole said in the speech overall? Interestingly, Biden used the bridge rhetoric again in his State of the Union address, his very partisan State of the Union address, which he talked about being a bridge between generations. A little bit different, but that was an absolutely clear distillation of it. And what Bob Dole was talking about, what he remembered, was a country at the pinnacle of greatness in many, many areas. And the World War II generation, what he remembered. It was a very moving speech, but it did not convince Americans because we are so forward-looking. And even though we're pretty low these days about a lot of things, I think we still are forward-looking. And Trump is trying to take us back, and Biden, his age just can't seem to take us forward.
Of course, Bill Clinton sort of helped that message that we were already a good year and a half, maybe 2 years into like one of the absolute great, great booms. Perhaps those messages would have resonated differently had they taken place in 1992, when we were just coming out of a recession. And I hate to be so sort of economy dependent here, but it seems like that does matter. One of my favorite studies, a study which helped prompt me, I was going to say incite me, they'll prompt me to write my book, was an interesting study by the economist Ray Fair at Yale, who does a lot of work on election forecasting and trying to see what roles various economic variables play. But he wrote an interesting paper looking at changes in infrastructure spending and sort of debts and deficits over the past 50, 60 years. And he had an interesting conclusion. But not using public surveys, but using those two indicators, the fact that we began spending less as a country on infrastructure starting in the early 70s, and our fiscal situation changed for the worse starting in the early 70s, he said that his conclusion was that we became a less future-oriented society starting in the 1970s. And he gave a list of reasons why that could possibly be true. Almost every sort of social change you could imagine, he listed as a possibility, from the Vietnam War to women's liberation to the boomers hitting a certain. He goes, "I have no idea if any of these are true. I have no idea if there are other ones." He goes, "I'm not even sure it's something you could figure out, but we saw it." He goes, "But we see it in America in a way we don't see it in other countries, that we became less future oriented." Does any of that resonate with you? What you see in the polling data? Something happened to America And perhaps we're not as future-oriented as we were coming out of the atomic age and space age.
He may be on to something with that. Change was happening so rapidly in the 1970s on so many fronts. It may be that just the overall push, the changes in the social realm that we were absorbing very quickly in women's roles and in gay rights, all sorts of things, actually made us a little more worried about the future because change was happening so fast. But that's really very interesting. In an earlier period, we had things to look back to, like the moon landing and other things like that that we could point to, and we were so proud of those kinds of things. And of course, patriotism changed in the periods that he's talking about. We were less willing to say that we were patriotic. So there were a lot of changes happening very fast in the post-60s radicalization. We're in a way going through that now on college campuses. You see a new sort of radicalization, a lot of changes, and the public is sort of pushing back in a couple of areas. So I think he may be onto something. There may be periods when we're less future-oriented, but I think the underlying long-term sentiment is a more future-oriented population than other countries.
It's funny when you were talking about the moon landing. This is something I bring up occasionally when I talk to people, that when a politician wants to have a commercial that's very stirring, sort of, I'm going to return us to greatness. They'll show, interesting scenes from the past. Maybe they'll show Jesse Owens at the Olympics in 1936, or Patton's tanks rolling through France. And then maybe they'll show Apollo. Then it ends. I guess you could kind of show a computer. It's not very stirring to show like the internet or something. And I just wonder if is that we've just given people fewer things to be nostalgic about recently. So instead of being nostalgic for the last 20 years, the last 30 years, you hear politicians being nostalgic for the 1960s still, or maybe that's just a boomer thing.
Yeah, well, the 50s, certainly. The 50s was very powerful in the polls as a decade that people looked to for a long time. But since that time, it's been the 80s. And again, because of the great sort of boom in the late 1990s that you were talking about, that was shorter lived in the public imagination. So when pollsters ask, well, what decade is the best decade? That's not coming up in the way the 80s and the 50s came up when we all felt that way.
Do Republicans and Democrats express nostalgia differently?
I think if you break the data down by age, you'd probably see a lot of similarities between Democrats and Republicans in various age groups about how they view the present and the past. Younger Republicans still tend to be a little bit more optimistic. Again, I haven't looked at that data closely recently, but that was true in the mid-90s, let's say, for example. A lot depends on who's in power in the presidency, and so you get very different attitudes based on that.
One thing I get concerned about, I do get concerned that we've become less future-oriented. We become more risk-averse. The most recent example is artificial intelligence when ChatGPT was released. My perception is that there were lots of positive news stories for about a week and a half about, oh, look what this thing can do. And the image generation can create these, cool images, even if not an artist, or you can create like a rap song as done by Winston Churchill. And then it became, oh, by the way, it's probably going to take your job. And then when it's done taking your job, it'll probably kill you, just like in the Terminator. I've seen a lot of that both in the regular media, Twitter. So that kind of thing makes me concerned. And when I connect that to this kind of rejection of trade and economic openness, I wonder if there is something worrisome going on in our spirit, that we're less adventuresome, more risk averse, and that we sort of fear change in a way that maybe is counter to what we like to think of as the American spirit.
Well, we've always been surprisingly risk averse when the pollsters ask about things like willingness to ride in the shuttle and all sorts of other things like that. So we're just getting to know AI. We're just getting to know a little bit about crypto. And of course, the first news stories are always positive, as you said, but then you get the negative drumbeat. So I think at this point, and you and I have talked a little bit about this in the past, the fear of losing one's job. It's real. It's a small slice of the population. It's not everyone. Again, I keep pushing back because I do think we're still pretty much, we are future oriented. We are more risk averse, and that does worry me. And there's some suggestion that we're turning inward. But again, the experiences of a lot of foreign adventures abroad, whether it's Iraq, other kinds of things where we've always worried about playing that global role. We've always preferred to concentrate on problems closer to home. But at the same time, when you ask Americans, as one of the great pollsters has done since the 1940s, is it better for us to play an active role in a foreign affairs, or is it better for us to stay out? That question has been asked about 40 times since 1947, and the trend line is so stable at around 66% active role that, again, you've got all these different currents going on, and I think it depends on what's being emphasized in it, and the negativity bias of the media just plays an enormous role here.
I wonder if I was looking for a survey question that really kind of get at risk aversion, how people feel about technology that maybe would separate out politics. I wonder if I would look at something like, what do you think about nuclear energy? That poll does move. It's not always the same. Was not great after Fukushima in 2011. But I think more recently, people have become more positive. And I wonder if that's a shorthand that says something about us. If we start to see polls where people are like, yes, we understand trade-offs, but we think it's for the best. And we're not going to keep fearing meltdowns and Three Mile Island. So I always like to look and see if I can find a shorthand that captures something that may be hard to measure.
Except for not in my backyard. There is still a lot of that sentiment, and people still remember Three Mile Island here in the United States. And so I'm hopeful that a younger generation will be more receptive to nuclear. Americans at this point want all of the above in energy policy. And I'm not sure I'd ask that question because I think there's a residual concern about Fukushima and Three Mile Island, and still a little bit wary about it. And that's an interesting area where France is so different from the United States. That's not usually the case. They're very forward-looking in terms of attitudes about nuclear energy. Don't they still have about 60 nuclear power plants or something like that? I mean, a lot of them. But that kind of searing personal experience tends to color attitudes for quite a while. But yeah, I think there may be more receptivity among a younger generation. But the noisy, never again, never here, those kinds of things, not in my backyard, are going to get the media attention.
If you look at America today and sort of the success, I think, of a nostalgia message by politicians, how does a politician give a forward-looking message, a future-oriented message that says the best days are ahead of us, that gives a 1996 bridge to the future message rather than a bridge to the past message?
We should elect you. You should become a candidate. I think you acknowledge the problems, but you make three quarters of your speech the forward-looking speech going forward, saying we still have so much potential in this country. Look at this, look at this, look at this. And, it may not be, as you say, the same thing as a rocket going up in space or something like that. And I mean, think about the popularity of some of the things Musk and other people have done. I mean, Americans love that entrepreneurial energy, and they see an awful lot of it in our society. So I would spend three quarters of your speech on looking forward, saying the best is yet to come. And that's hard at a time when inflation is so potent, but I'd still try to use that message. And I think combined with just a recognition that there are some pretty serious problems right now, and that's what I'd go with.
Carl, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. Great stuff.
Thanks very much, Jim. Good to see you.